Welcome to Module 3 of the Virtual Instructional Leadership Challenge. I'm Justin Bader, and I want to congratulate you and thank you for making so much progress in this program. And I want to invite you to share with me the results that you're getting in your school, the learning and the impact that you're seeing from engaging in this work with your staff. And in this module, we're going to talk about one of the most important and fundamental practices that you engage in as an instructional leader to impact student learning through your work with teachers, and that is conversation. I believe that conversation is absolutely fundamental to the work we do around instructional improvement, especially when it comes to helping teachers improve their professional judgment, which I believe is our single greatest point of leverage as instructional leaders. So let's jump right in and talk about why it is that it's conversation, not any kind of written feedback or any kind of form that we fill out. It's conversation that ultimately changes teacher practice. And I think it's true in general, in life, not just in a professional context, but it's true in general as humans that when we change our beliefs, when we change our behavior, when we think of our practice in a new light or our beliefs in a new light, it almost always happens through conversation with someone else that we trust, that we respect, that we care about. Talking with one another and having conversations is really at the heart of how we relate to one another as human beings. And two major things happen through conversation that are relevant to our purposes here when we're talking about interactions between instructional leaders and teachers. First of all, they allow us to develop and maintain relationships, right? The relationships that we have with teachers exist largely through the conversations that we have. And if it's been a while since you've spoken with someone, you may feel the need to kind of reconnect and chat with them a little bit. Maybe some kind of informal chat is helpful at first to kind of rebuild that bridge and kind of warm people back up to that professional relationship. And then when it comes to talking about substantive issues, it matters that we're not talking with strangers, right? We're people who know each other, who work together closely, and that relationship is both created and sustained through the many conversations that we have. Now, also through those conversations, we get something else that's equally important for our work as leaders, and that is information, right? When people come and talk to you, they share information with you, they bring things to your attention, they put things on your radar that may have gone to the back of your mind, even if you were already aware of them. And this sense of what matters, what's important right now, what we need to be focused on, it's a collective sense that we develop and update through conversation, right? We talk about what we're dealing with, what the most pressing problems are, and how to solve those problems. We make those decisions largely as a result of conversation. So it's absolutely critical that we pay attention to conversation and that we invest the time that it takes, right? We know that it's impossible to be a good leader if you don't make time to talk with your people, right? If your door's always closed, if you need people to make an appointment and you're never available for them to really sit down and talk with, we know it's going to be very difficult to be an effective leader because of the importance of relationships and the importance of information flow. So in a normal year, right, we structure lots of things around that reality. And we have lots of opportunities to talk with people informally, in the hallway, you know, before and after class, in the staff lounge, maybe you're getting a cup of coffee, in the parking lot as you're arriving or leaving or doing bus duty. There are all these settings where we interact informally with people, as well as settings where we interact more formally in a meeting, whether that's an IEP meeting, a hiring committee, you know, all these different settings where we work together in teams. Maybe you have a leadership council. Maybe you have all staff meetings in a typical year where everybody is getting together in one room for professional development or for making decisions. And then, of course, we have the formal one-on-one meetings as well, where we set goals with teachers and talk about their goals, do a pre-observation or a post-observation individual conference to discuss what we saw in the classroom or the observation that we're doing. So in a normal year, we have lots of opportunities to develop and maintain those relationships and to sustain that critical information flow. But this, of course, is not a normal year. And what we've got to think about is not only how can we take these same settings and make them virtual. I think that's not a perfect solution to, you know, to simply take what would have been a face-to-face conversation and put it on Zoom or a video call of some sort. But also we have to think about not only how do we get the formal conversations and meetings to take place effectively given our current constraints, but also how do we make up for the loss of the informal interactions, right? If we are, somebody is quarantined, if we're working from home, or if school is closed, and maybe some people are on campus and some people aren't, we're going to have fewer conversations face-to-face, especially in those informal settings like the parking lot, the hallway, the staff lounge. And that can really have a negative impact on our relationships. We just lose touch with each other. We lose the sense of camaraderie that we're used to. And it makes it much more difficult to communicate information in kind of a low friction, casual way, right? People can still send you an email or call you or set up a meeting, but it's just more work. And as a result, less information makes its way to us when we can't have those casual interactions. So in this module, we're going to talk about how to deal with that reality and make sure that those relationships and that information flow are sustained and maximize your opportunities to have feedback conversations that change teacher practice. So in this module, a couple of kind of high points that we're going to hit on. We are going to talk very specifically about getting into a model, a conceptual model for why it is that conversations change teacher practice, not suggestions, not written feedback, not written comments, but it's actually the conversation itself where people decide to change. We'll talk about some ways to make up for the loss of those informal interactions, and we'll talk about how to structure your overall process of conversing with staff very deliberately so that you don't leave anyone out or lose track of people or just kind of let people slip out of your mind. So with that, let's jump right into our kind of theory of action for why conversation is what really changes teacher practice. As we talked about in module 2, I think at the heart of this is what Weick calls sense making. Right? Sense making is this process of making sense of what has happened to us and what we're experiencing by talking with other people. And it's based on our identity. It's based on our relationship with other people. It's based on looking back at our recent experiences. So when you have a feedback conversation with a teacher, you're not only talking about what happened in the lesson, you're talking about how you currently think about teaching and learning, how the teacher currently thinks about their students and their own practice and what they're doing. And we know so much of that has changed this year. So this is more important than ever for people to be able to make sense of what they're dealing with and be able to come up with discoveries about and insights about what they might want to change. That process of sense making and just kind of orienting ourselves and figuring out, okay, what does this mean? Where are we right now? Is very different as an explanation for how feedback conversations change practice than what I think is our default assumption that teachers change practice as a result of recommendations or advice or suggestions from instructional leaders. I want to argue very directly here that it is not our suggestions that cause people to change their practice. It's the sense making that they do in those feedback conversations, even if we don't make a suggestion at all, that allows people to identify changes that they want to make in their practice and allows them to improve their professional judgment. So there's this myth out there that if we want to improve teacher practice, that we really have to give people high quality feedback. And I know every year we put a lot of effort into providing high quality feedback. We try to do calibration trainings and we train people on our evaluation criteria and we try to achieve inter-rater reliability so that if you got feedback from one person, it would match the feedback that you would get from someone else who had been trained the same way. But I think a lot of that misses the point, because people don't really change their practice just in response to suggestions or feedback, right? And we're going to talk about why that is, the identity-based reasons that is. It fundamentally comes down to conversation and the sense-making practice that we take people through that determines why they change, when and how they're going to change their practice. Ultimately, it comes down to a decision that the teacher needs to make. The teacher has to decide for himself or for herself whether they're going to change something and what they're going to change it to. And it's not simply a matter of having access to good ideas. And I think this was a hard lesson for me to learn as a new principal, that, you know, it wasn't about me providing the perfect suggestion or the perfect idea or insight on how that lesson could have been better. That was not actually the source of the changes that teachers made in their practice, but the role that I played as a conversation partner and as a knowledgeable conversation partner was still absolutely essential. And there's a key differentiator between staff members, depending on where they are in their career, that I call the locus of professional authority. This shifts over time as people become professionals, as they enter the profession and kind of get their feet under them and advance and start to trust their own judgment more. This matters hugely for how teachers change their practice in feedback conversations. So let's explore that question now. How does a teacher's stage of development in their career impact how they respond to feedback? At the beginning of their career, teachers, who we might think of as novices at this stage, look to a mentor teacher or perhaps one of their professors or someone who played a formative role or is still playing a formative role in their career as their source of authority, right? So if you have a new teacher mentor assigned to that new novice teacher, then that person might become that teacher's source of professional authority. And if that mentor says, you should do this, they're gonna say, okay, I wanna succeed, I don't want to mess things up, so I'm just gonna do what you tell me. And of course, it can be helpful to have good guidance like that, but you can't operate as a professional with that level of, you know, just kind of doing what you're told guidance throughout your entire career. As you develop, as teachers grow and become true professionals, they have to take on more and more responsibility and become their own source of authority ultimately. So at the beginning, they're looking to a mentor teacher. The second stage, which we call the pre-professional stage, where people are really a member of a team, they're a member of the staff, they're not just on their own flailing and doing what their mentor tells them every time they throw them a lifeline. At the pre-professional stage, people have started to internalize some of the shared expectations that exist in the profession and that exist among staff. And probably, a lot of that comes from locally shared expectations, people on your staff who share kind of how they do things and what standard they do things to. People take a lot of cues from the people that they immediately work with, but they also take those cues from norms that they pick up across the profession, maybe in professional reading or on social media or from their own experiences of school as students or maybe from friends and family members who are teachers. You know, there's this sense of this is how things are done that informs teachers when they're at that pre-professional stage. And this is where we have a big opportunity to influence teacher practice through the shared expectations that we develop and articulate at the school or district level. But there's a third stage as well that I think we have to be very aware of when people advance to that true kind of professional level in their career. And I call this, of course, the professional stage. And this is where people start to trust their own professional judgment more than anything else. And that professional judgment can still be shaped, right? It's not fixed, it's not set in stone. It's still subject to change as a result of conversation, but it's not a source of authority in, other people's expectations aren't the same source of authority that they were in the pre-professional and novice stages. You know, a true professional starts to trust their own judgment more than anything else. So if we arrange these in a table, we go from novice to pre-professional to professional, and we see this kind of taking on of that responsibility and that source of authority when it comes to making decisions. And this is as it should be, right? We want people to look to experts and to their mentors at the beginning of their career. We want them to go along with shared expectations and contribute to those shared expectations and the culture of the school and the norms of the profession as they advance. And then ultimately, we want them to trust themselves and their own internalized values and beliefs and understanding of best practices. So if ultimately what we're trying to do here with improving teacher practice is improve teachers' professional judgment, we're going to have to do some intellectual work, right? And this is back to the Charlotte Danielson quotes from Module 2, that really teaching is cognitive work. And when we're trying to help teachers improve, we're not just trying to help them improve the mechanics, the observable behaviors. We're trying to help them improve the judgments that they're making behind the scenes. That's why, my friends, conversation is so critical. Improving professional judgment is our single biggest point of leverage, and conversation is the way to make it happen. And we'll get into that throughout the remainder of Module 3. For now, I want to invite you to get out your journal and do some reflection on this. Think about a time when you made a major shift of belief or a shift of perspective. What was it that led up to that shift? What conversations did you have with other people? Maybe who were those people? What role did they play in your life that led up to that shift? This could be something that's outside of your professional practice. This could be a personal belief, maybe a belief about what's right or what's just, or maybe a belief about politics or religion. You know, who knows? It could be anything. But I'm going to guess that you can think of numerous examples of times when you have shifted your perspective because of a conversation. And I'd like you to just think and reflect for a moment on what that conversation was like and who you had maybe some of those conversations with. And then second, think about a teacher whose practice you would like to shift right now. Someone who you would like to help advance and improve their professional judgment. What conversations might need to take place with that person? And what evidence might be helpful in that conversation? When you've completed your journal, you're ready to move on to the next section. Thanks so much for taking this journey with me.